Jesus tells us to take up our cross and follow him. You're listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities, and it is our aim to lead you to the cross through the teaching of God's word.
Come break our culture, tear down our pride. Lord, take your church and purify. Oh, we are ready to stand in your love. Come, King Jesus, deliver us. Oh, my King is coming. Restless hearts, be still.
Welcome to Truth Set Free, our Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities Q&A program. It is recorded live on Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. with Pastor Matt Lewis and Steve Winery. You can view the live program at our Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities Facebook page and on our YouTube channel. You can text your questions to 707-872-7677 or email them to crosswalkradio@gmail.com.
God brings judgment down on nations because of that. And so it's not just confined to Sodom and Gomorrah. It's with other nations too. And God makes it clear that these are things that are not acceptable. The blood of children. God brings judgment on nations because of these things. And God states these things clearly in Scripture. And so if I was going to go out and talk to people about what God thinks about the United States, I'd be taking clear passages that just speak about that and not be superstitious. So
taking this article, setting that aside, one thing I've noticed among Christian circles is that because of the craziness of 2024 and the fact that old conspiracy theories happened the last couple of years,
yeah,
there's been like this huge resurgence of taking things, these abstract things, like I've seen photos of stadiums, and they'll relate that to paganism and things on the dollar bill, and you can throw in flat earthers and all this crazy stuff that they try and tie into eschatological prophecy, yeah, about judgment or waking up or the coming of the world. But most of those conversations go with those same people getting all excited about these abstract details, knowing nothing about what the Bible actually says,
yeah,
in Revelation and prophecy, because Matthew 24, the book of Revelation, there are certainly signs, mm-hmm, that God said was going to happen that are specific, right, that you can look to that fit together according to his word.
Right.
And you don't need all the abstract things. And a lot of times you can be gullible or naive or taken advantage of when you don't know those things, because all these things go, oh, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. And so, you know, the Bible talks about certain nations that are going to be aligned in the last days, and we see those nations aligned in the times that we're in. The Bible flat out says that Israel is going to be a nation and causing a problem to the whole world, and we see that in the times that we're in. You know, I don't need a solar eclipse to know that I'm in the last days.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there are all these things that are tangible and actual fulfillments of prophecy that just blow people away if you present them to them. And you don't need to be caught up in the latest craze about, you know, what's, you know, the return of Christ is going to happen this year because the sun's in Virgo or whatever. And so I think we need to be careful. Otherwise, we risk credibility.
Yes.
So I want to be credible to not only to popular culture that is all into whatever new exciting thing is coming up, but I want to be credible to people who are actually thinkers and you know something about some of these issues. And so it's like we need to be careful about this stuff. So
amen.
Yeah.
All right. This one's from Betty. She says this: have you heard about the organization Trace Diaz? I was invited to a weekend retreat, and it looks legit on the website, but with the high levels of deception out there these days, I wanted to know if you detect anything to be concerned about. Just listen to a podcast on the deception of Freemasonry. So I'm wanting to be super cautious to avoid anything like that.
You know, Trace Diaz is one of those things where, you know, people, you know, take off, and it's kind of a parachurch type of thing where people take off and they're just going to spend time basically with the Lord and focusing in on what their responsibilities are. And I think that's all good stuff. They, on purpose, don't tell you a lot about what's going on because they want to surprise people. And so, you know, I don't get all frightened about that kind of stuff. You know, it's like they can do that kind of stuff if they want. One of the things that you need to be aware of is that it did come out of Catholicism. And so this is something that came out of movement in Spain after World War II. And it moved through Spanish-speaking countries. And obviously, you can tell because it's Tres Días, which means 3 days. And so there's probably some Catholic influence in there. I don't want to pick it apart because I don't know enough about it. I read some reviews on it, and a lot of people really liked it. And so, okay. But I would just, if I was going to something like that, I'd keep my antenna up. And it would be like that with some of the other parachurch things that people do. I've been invited to some of those things, and I've never really gone because of what I'm like.
Yeah. All right. How did God take Enoch into heaven if one has to be perfect to enter God's presence? Did Enoch, similar to Job before his friends show up, live a perfect life? Sin was in him at birth, so I think not. But what then did God take him and... take him out and put him in Abraham's bosom? That was before Abraham's time, so maybe it was there and just called something else.
Right. So let me go backwards there. Abraham's bosom before Abraham would have just been the paradise compartment of Hades. And Jesus described Hades as having two compartments with a gulf fixed in between. And so I don't know anything about the afterlife, and so I'm going to take his word for it. You know, that's how things go. As far as Enoch goes, no, obviously he's a sinner just like everybody else. And so he did have a close walk with God, and so God liked him, and so he took him. And so God can do anything that he wants there with Enoch. And Enoch would be made righteous in exactly the same way that everybody is made righteous through faith in God, and specifically looking forward to the coming of the Messiah. The Bible in the next chapter, that is out of Genesis chapter 5, the whole story of Enoch, starting in verse 18 and going through verse 24. And when you get to the next chapter, it talks about Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And that's how people are always saved, through the grace of God. So one of the things that you got to keep in mind when you're looking at the Old Testament is that these people didn't get saved in any different way than we do. And so Abraham is called the father of faith, and the Bible teaches that the reason that Abraham was made right with God is because he believed God, and God accounted it to him for righteousness. And that's exactly the same way that we come into a relationship with the Lord. Abraham was looking forward to the coming of the Messiah, as Enoch would be looking forward to the coming of the Messiah. We're on the other end of that whole thing, looking backwards at the coming of the Messiah. Enoch and these guys had sacrifices that symbolized the sacrifice that Messiah was going to make. And we have communion that looks back on the sacrifice that Jesus did make. And so whenever you're talking about salvation in the Bible, you're talking about it basically from the same point of view, in the sense that salvation is by grace and grace alone. These people didn't get saved because they offered up a lamb. They got saved because they believed on the Lord who told them to offer up a lamb. And we're not saved by taking communion. We're saved because we believe on the Lord who gave us communion. Right? And so, again, you have that whole picture. And so it is interesting because I do think that Enoch went directly into the presence of the Lord, and that's something that's different than anybody else that you would have. I think that Enoch, yeah, and so that's cool. But actually, I don't know that. I just know that God loved Enoch, and God took him because he liked him. And I'm presuming that he took him into his presence, but I don't know that for sure. And, you know, like you said, he could have been in Abraham's bosom for all I know. And, you know, again, one of the things that you've got with the Lord is that He's everywhere, and he can be with his people in that place just as well as he can in heaven. So there you go.
Awesome. Just on a side note, I just went through Abraham and detailed studied out, you know, the whole faith thing, and I was blown away about how God took all the things he did with Abraham and gave it to the New Testament apostles to explain the gospel, faith, grace, trust, everything that we as Christians understand because of the New Testament was there in the Old Testament, just not unpacked. And I knew it was there, but not to the level of precision and integration when I studied it out. It kind of blew my mind.
Yeah. It's like, you know, again, Abraham's the father of faith. And so he's used as the example all the way through the New Testament, you know, especially Paul talking about Abraham all the way through the New Testament.
Yeah. And Romans, passages, Hebrews.
A whole book of Galatians almost. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And
okay. All right. Who was or was Melchizedek Jesus? If so, why wasn't he called an angel of the Lord like other Old Testament appearances? And if not, was who was this Melchizedek guy? King of Peace out of Salem, one of Christ's many titles. So appears to on the scene, Abraham pays these tithes to him. He's a king, he's a priest. Who is this guy?
The reason that the question is being asked is because of the book of Hebrews. And I believe Hebrews was written by Paul the Apostle. There's really early church testimony to that fact. And he's writing like a rabbi. And in Hebrews chapter 7, he speaks about Melchizedek, and he says, "For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being translated king of righteousness," and that's what Melchizedek means, "and then also king of Salem," and that's what he's called in Genesis chapter 14, meaning king of peace. You're probably familiar with Salam. The Arabs say Salam all the time, and that's Semitic language, and Salem means peace. Salam means peace also, meaning king of peace, without father, without mother, without genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like the Son of God, remains a priest continually. Consider how great this man was, to whom even the patriarch Abraham gave a tenth of the spoils, and indeed those who are of the sons of Levi who received the priesthood have a commandment to receive tithes from the people according to the law, that is from their brethren, though they have come from the loins of Abraham. But he whose genealogy is not derived from them received tithes from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. And then he goes on to talk about Levi in a type paid tithes through Abraham, his grandfather, to Melchizedek. And so the other thing that Paul's going to do in Hebrews chapter 7 is he's going to refer to a passage in the book of Psalms where, and it's messianic, where it talks about Jesus as a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. And no, I don't believe that Melchizedek was Jesus. And so that would be the reason that he's not called the angel of the Lord in the passage. I think Melchizedek was a real-life guy. And that what Paul is doing here is using Melchizedek as a type. You know, when he says without father and without mother, the point that he's making is typically speaking, if you're looking at the type, you have a situation where Melchizedek's mom and dad aren't mentioned. And so he would be without genealogy also. And so Melchizedek's lineage is not mentioned. And so he's without father, without mother, and so on. And that kind of stuff. You got to keep in mind that when you're speaking typically, as far as the models that you have in the Old Testament, that it doesn't, just because Hebrews says that doesn't mean that he didn't really have a dad. So for example, God, when he's speaking to Abraham in Genesis 22, God says to Abraham, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, and offer him in the place that I tell you." And immediately, if you know your book of Genesis, you know that there's an issue there. Because did Abraham have one son and only one son? And the answer is no. He had two sons, and one was Isaac, and the other one was Ishmael. But Ishmael was a son of the flesh, and Ishmael isn't regarded by God in Genesis chapter 22. Because what God's doing there is he's making the situation that Abraham's going to go through a type of what he's going to do with his own son. And so Jesus is the only begotten son of the Father. And it took Abraham 3 days to get to Mount Moriah. And Abraham considered Ishmael to be a dead man for 3 days. And so typically, in type, he received his son, who he considered to be dead, on the third day. That's a picture of the resurrection.
So
and
cool.
Obviously, yeah. And there's all kinds of stuff in that passage. And so with Abraham and Melchizedek, you've got a type there of a higher priesthood than what you have with the priesthood of Aaron. Because again, Aaron comes from Levi. Levi was a grandson of Abraham, right? It goes, Isaac, Jacob, no, he's a great-grandson. Great-grandson of Abraham. And so Levi is giving tithes through Abraham to Melchizedek. It's really interesting that when Melchizedek comes to visit Abraham, he offers him a meal of bread and wine.
Uh-huh.
So he's giving the guy communion, you know, in that passage. And then Abraham gives him tithes. And so I think that Melchizedek was a real guy. You know, as far as one of the other things that we have with that is that we look at Melchizedek and we go, well, Abraham's the father of faith, and Abraham is the father of the nation of Israel, and that's how God was reaching the world. And so where'd Melchizedek, how is Melchizedek a priest of God? And one of the things that you have to remember is that they all got off the ark. So Noah's family got off the ark, and Noah's family dispersed into different places as far as the descendants. You have the sons of Ham, and you have the sons of Japheth, and you have the sons of Seth. And Abraham is of the sons of Seth. And Ham, for example, some of the sons of Ham were the Egyptians. And the sons of Japheth, for example, some of them were the Greeks and the Romans. And so you have the population of the earth dispersing at the Tower of Babel. And the fact that Abraham is following God and he's got this special relationship with God doesn't mean that God didn't have a witness in the rest of the earth anyplace. And so Melchizedek is a leftover from the traditions that would have been handed down from Noah to his sons. And so Melchizedek was a faithful follower of God who happened to be outside of the Hebrew nation at that time. And so Abraham recognized that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When God chose him out of the Ur of the Chaldees and doing this whole work, it doesn't mean he's the only person on the earth that God's speaking to.
Yeah. God's working in everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. All right, I'm going to throw this one up here because it relates to the question that you just spoke of, but it says this. Where did the two raptured men go if Jesus says no one has ever gone up into heaven except the Son of Man? Speaking of Enoch and what we were just talking about.
When Jesus is talking in John chapter 3, let me go to the passage itself, and I'm going to get specific with you. This is what Jesus says. No one has ascended to heaven but he who came down from heaven, that is the Son of Man who is in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so the Son of Man must be lifted up. Okay. What does the word ascended mean? And the word ascended means, you know, take off, you know, under your own power, basically. It's the idea, not necessarily of being, Jesus wasn't just taken into heaven, he took off, you know. And so when you're talking about ascension, you know, for example, the rapture is not an ascension into heaven. The rapture is a catching away of believers. I'm not going to be a guy who at the end of, you know, when I'm in heaven, is going, I ascended up into heaven. You know? Those words are never coming out of my mouth. And so you got to make a distinction between what happens with Jesus and what happens with all the rest of us. And so Enoch did not ascend into heaven. He was taken. Elijah did not ascend into heaven. He was taken in a chariot of fire. And so God was the one who was at work doing those things, where you have a difference with Christ himself. And so that's what I would do with that.
Yeah.
And again, with specifically with Elijah, it says he went to heaven. You know, a chariot of fire took him into heaven. And so that could be talking about taking him into the sky. That's a possibility. Or it could be referencing heaven itself. So Is that good?
Yeah. All right. The Nephilim were described as a result of sons of God and the daughters of men coming together. They were also described as men of renown, and renown can have a positive connotation. Were the Nephilim at least partially responsible for the evil in the world and the subsequent global flood? Question mark. Realizing that Genesis 6:4 states that they existed afterward, could they exist in our current time?
Yes and yes. It's really interesting that in Genesis chapter 6, and you reference verse 4, but in verse 1 it says, "Now it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, that daughters were born to them, and that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and took wives for themselves of all whom they chose," and that's where the Nephilim come from. And then in verse 5, after the verse you referenced, it says, "And the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I've created," and so on. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And so, yes, I think that the Nephilim specifically are being pointed to as one of those things that angered God, and that they were, it looks like they were instrumental in leading people into wickedness. It's kind of the point of the passage. And so I don't see a way to get away from that. Here's another thing. When you were talking about the passage says, those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. And you rightly said that it could have a negative connotation or a positive connotation. And I think that what's being stated here is what the pagans regarded as their mighty men and their men of renown were actually Nephilim. And so you have all these traditions of men who had been sired by the gods, so to speak. And so you have all these traditions of Zeus coming down to women and having relations with different women, and the children that came from those relations were guys like Hercules, for example, or Heracles in Greek. You know, there are some others that are less well known, but these guys are all considered to be mighty men and demigods and sons of the gods and that kind of stuff. And what the Bible teaches is that's not a good thing. That's a bad thing. It's they're not sons of the gods. It's all demonic. And it's one of the reasons that God had the giants wiped out. Nephilim are referenced in the book of Numbers, and they are connected with the Anakim and the Rephaim and the Zamzumim and different races of giants that you find in Canaan. And so the same events that took place in Genesis chapter 6 took place again. These guys did not survive the flood. It took place again as people became corrupted and got into the occult and paganism and that kind of stuff. And actually, there have been giants that have been referenced all through history on every continent. And they're always considered to be wicked men that normal races of men exterminate.
That's all the time we have for this week. If you have questions for Pastor Steve, email us at crosswalkradio@gmail.com or send us a text at 707-872-7677. God bless.
You've been listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you're wanting to know more about what it means to follow Christ, then please contact our church office by phone at 509-736-2086. You can also look us up online at calvary-tricities.org. There you will find a wide variety of Steve's teachings to listen to or to download for free. If you want to join us for church sometime, we're located at 10611 West Clearwater Avenue in Kennewick, Washington. Our Sunday morning service times are 7:30, 9:15, and 11:15, and our Sunday evening service is at 6 p.m. We also meet on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. We hope you have been blessed today, and will join us again next time on Crosswalk.